and welcome to My Streaming Bubble, the podcast where I talk about the shows I love with the people I tolerate. I am your TV watching and talking host, Jen. And finally, after years and years of us talking about doing this episode, we're finally doing it. Sadly, it's not any of the CW Arrowverse shows yet, but it's still filled with plenty of interesting features. In case you haven't deduced it yet, today... In case you haven't deduced it yet, today, Laura and I are soldiers as the game is on afoot during today's discussion of BBC's Sherlock. Hi, Laura.
Hi.
So I realized as I was reading that, like, I didn't actually introduce you until like the very end. I'm like, you have no idea what I'm talking about yet.
It's okay. It's supposed to be a deduction.
True.
Deduce who we're talking to today.
Yeah. I mean, it's in the title of the episode, so it's not a lot of deducing. Like, even Lestrade could figure it out. So,
yeah. Yeah. That, well, maybe.
All right. So, how you been, Laura? It's been not as long as last time, but glad to always have you back in the bubble.
Pretty good. Yeah, I can't really complain. You know, winter feels like it's over, so I'm in a good mood today.
Yay! Yeah, the sun is shining. It's not like blistery cold like it was yesterday. Because yesterday was one of those like deceiving days where it looked gorgeous out. And then you go outside and it was just like this biting, blistery wind.
Real bad. That wind got worse at night too. Mm-hmm. Just terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm ready for spring.
It felt weirdly appropriate for Sherlock though. Like Sherlock viewing. Because I was still doing the tail end of my rewatch. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. It just kind of set the mood.
Kind of, yeah, I could see that. You know, very London-y. Anyway, so as we said, we're talking about Sherlock, BBC Sherlock, which stars Bumblebee Kumquat, or Benedict Cumberbatch, if you're that person, Martin Freeman, Andrew Scott, Una Stubbs, Mark Gatiss, Louise Brealey, Amanda Abington, just to name a few. It is written by Mark Gatiss and Stephen Moffat and Steve Thompson and is based on the works of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. It is available to stream on Filio with subscription, because I guess Filio is a thing that has a subscription.
That's a weird sounding name.
It is. And it's available to rent or buy on various streamers and, of course, free through your local library. So.
Woo.
Woo! All right, so here is your spoiler warning and brief synopsis. We are just going to keep plugging along because we got a lot to cover today. So, what IMDb says, the quirky spin on Conan Doyle's iconic sleuth pitches him as a high-functioning sociopath in modern-day London. Assisting him in his investigations, Afghanistan war vet John Watson, who's introduced to Holmes by a mutual acquaintance. So what I says about it is, like, I really don't have a whole heck of a lot to add to that. I think this is a nice quirky spin on the series that is set in modern day London. I like the use of the technology and like the special effects and everything. I think it wonderfully mixes humor, sentiment, and a bit of suspense and mystery all into these little mini movies that is just chock full of Easter eggs for those familiar with the stories, but is still a fun and interesting watch. So it's like, it's kind of like, I kind of almost put it in the same category as like Lower Decks, where you don't need to know everything to know, to enjoy this and appreciate it. So I've never really read any of the stories. So I went into Sherlock just as like knowing who the character was and everything very vaguely and just falling in love with this series. So that's really... I didn't have anything clever and witty for it. I'm just like, no, I love this show. Shut up. So, like I said, we're going to try and cover the entire series versus going season by season how we normally would go cover these. Only because this has been like 5 years in the making and I just wanted to get it done.
That is fair.
All right, so we'll go ahead and just get right into it. So we'll start with season one, our rants, raves, and faves. So, Laura, you want to share with us some of your general thoughts, your rants, raves, and/or faves?
Well, it's weird because I, as you know, am a huge Sherlock Holmes fan. Like, I read these books on repeat in elementary school, which may not have been appropriate, but you know, my library had them.
There
So
you go.
I'm not even sure how I found them in the first place. So it's funny because I don't regularly rewatch the show, and I'm not entirely sure why. But I'm kind of glad that I had this really huge break between when I'd seen it last and doing this rewatch, because it kind of highlighted faves and all that for me. Like, there are some episodes in each season that I remember much more clearly than the others. And one of the one that stuck out the most, and I could almost recite this episode, was the very first one, A Study in Pink. I don't know what it is about it that just appeals to me. Maybe it's the layers of genius facing genius, and the mystery of it, like all these people killing themselves but under duress.
Yep.
I don't know, it's just I thought it was a really clever take. And like, on the surface, the adversary that Sherlock faces in that episode, it was intriguing enough, but then it's proven that he's just an agent of Moriarty. And it's like, oh, I love Moriarty. Like, seriously, the next time I do a new D&D character, I am going to be a consultant criminal just for
Nice.
funsies. So I'm gonna have to be a bit evil.
Yes.
That season is really just, it's kind of near and dear to me overall, because it was a new take on Sherlock Holmes. And I always approach those with some trepidation, but I was so enamored with it after this season. Like, I was hooked. So there's something really special about this season. And I think it gets overlooked by the second season, because the second season, how can it not be anyone's favorite? The three episodes or movies or whatever you want to call them, they are the three most famous stories in the Sherlock Holmes anthology. Like, how can you not love this season? Whether you've read the books or not, these are the stories that made Sherlock Holmes so enduring throughout all of these years. And they did all three of them in one season. So I love this season, but then I'm like, oh no, what were they gonna do for the next season? So I know there's a lot of divisiveness on season three, because, well, how can it follow up on season two? But I like that it sort of turned more towards their personal lives and relationships and how those played into cases and the new criminal enemies and all that stuff. It was a nice change, and it kind of, for better or worse, it humanized Sherlock a bit. I think as far as you can go with trying to follow up the blockbuster that is season two, I still very much enjoyed season three. The rest of it, well, I don't know. It's still Sherlock. It's still entertaining. And there were still some good quotes from each of the episodes, and some interesting twists, but it lost its way a bit. But weirdly, it also stayed true to the darker side of Sherlock, which was kind of hinted at but never really shown beyond like nicotine patches. In the first few seasons, he very much was a drug user in the stories, and we're talking cocaine and stuff like that. So the nicotine patches and cigarettes and all that was quite tame. But then when it decided to go in that direction, it just jumped straight in. There was no like, okay, let's watch this go downhill. And like really explore that. Nope. It's like, oh, well, he's back on his junky ways. All right. Okay. I can accept this because I read the stories, but I wonder how it was like for you.
Well, with the series as a whole, I came into it a little late, and I actually saw season 3, episode 1, or series 3, as the Brits call it, The Empty Hearse, before I saw the the third episode of season 2, the Reichenbach Fall, I think is that, or
Yeah.
I'm getting my episode names confused.
That is the right
So
one.
I saw the explanation before I actually saw the episode of him faking his death. So I was a little bummed about that,
Oops.
but I had no idea. I didn't see that episode. So it took a little bit out of the Reichenbach Fall, but it was still a really great episode. So when I was watching it then from the beginning on, maybe it was either between like you and I or just like IMDb kind of reading up about how, at least in the first season, they substituted Sherlock's drug addiction with the nicotine and cigarettes. And it almost seemed like that was going to be it. But that's almost just like a stepping stone to the drug, the cocaine and the opium addiction that comes into play later in the series.
Yeah.
So it was just kind of an interesting. I guess it was just kind of interesting how they did it. And I almost wish they would have either just stuck to the cigarettes or introduced the drug addiction initially.
Right. And I mean, the undercurrent of him being an addict is there. He solves cases as a substitute, and as an antidote to boredom.
Bored. Bang, bang.
Which is a common theme with those of higher intellect in the show. They suffer from fits of boredom that are destructive to them.
Yeah, with this, so with season one, out of the three episodes, I do I really enjoy the first one. It's a lot of fun. It's you meet the characters. It's like the Sherlock and John's meet cute and everything, and
It was kind of a meet cute.
I just love how in like season one, John is so blown away and almost enamored with Sherlock's deducing to the point where Sherlock doesn't even really know how to deal with that at first. He's just like, oh, someone's not gonna tell me to fuck off, huh?
Right.
And Sherlock being egotistical and dramatic, of course he loves that. Of course he's gonna keep John as his pet, as the humans are often referred to as.
Yes, I love how he and Mycroft are like referring to other people as humans as if they are not.
I know. It's so much fun. This whole elevated self-worth. But I agree. Like, I think, yeah, the first two seasons definitely do a good job of kind of laying out some of the different cases. And we get little bits and pieces, almost montage-like, of past cases that they have covered and investigated. But we don't get like the full story. And I really like how the series does that. And kind of just incorporates a lot of the actual stories, the original stories, as these like passing headlines and brief sequences, kind of like in The Signs of Three during Sherlock's big best man speech, which way too long of a best man speech, just generally speaking.
Yeah.
What speech has like audience participation? Ugh. Anyway,
Well, to be fair,
to be fair.
he had like I don't think he's ever had to do anything like that before. And
Oh, absolutely not.
it went from nervousness to saying something really sweet, which is just so unlike Sherlock Holmes, the literary character, to solving a case. And we're all just along for the ride. But yeah, there were moments in there where you're like experiencing cringe on everyone's behalf.
Oh my
It's like,
God,
oh
yeah.
God, just stop, Sherlock. You're smart enough to know when to stop.
But I do like how, then in season three and everything, we get, like you said, more of the human side, the emotional side. And I think we see that, yes, Sherlock is the dramatic one, but he's also the emotional one, as it gets pointed out throughout the series. And I think we also see a little bit of Mycroft's sentiment, which is really interesting since he prides himself so much for like not being emotional and not being prone to outbursts of brotherly love and everything. But it's like, are you sure about that?
Yeah. Methinks thou dost protest too much.
Exactly. So I also just kind of like how all three Holmes kids are just like, oh, we don't understand emotions and feelings, but clearly they do. They just don't know how to express it properly.
Well, I think there's
in
different
a non-destructive
reasons.
Way.
Like, Mycroft was the oldest by, you know, 6 or 7 years, depending on which one you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, their mom was an addict and also like really, really intelligent. So I'm guessing that he got parentified in some ways and, you know, repressed some of his emotions in order to make the more logical decision and do what's right in the long term, which made him a giant asshole, but you know, it fits. Sherlock, on the other hand, became an emotionless person because of the trauma he experienced, which we find out about in season 4. And this doesn't really line up with, you know, the Sherlock Holmes stories that we know. This was creative embellishment. So humanizing Sherlock Holmes and bringing him more in touch with his emotional, human, sentimental side is new ground.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it was done in a respectful way.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I really liked seeing these little bits of emotion, compassion, and everything from Sherlock. And like the little bits we get even from like Mycroft. And I think I'm more kind of blown away or surprised by Mycroft than Sherlock. Because again, Mycroft says so often how he's not, you know, emotional. He's not like them and all of that. But it's like, you know, he is so concerned about Sherlock. And he even says that the whole like idea of possibly losing Sherlock just, he doesn't like it, you know, after Mary shoots Sherlock and everything. He tells Sherlock that real quick when they're at their parents' house. And Sherlock's like, what the hell am I supposed to do with that? So it really does make you wonder what Mycroft saw and went through as the eldest to feel like he would still be lost without his little brother.
Well, you know? It's weird because their sister also felt more attachment towards Sherlock.
Mm-hmm.
So, and Moriarty was obsessed with him. So my big question is, what is it about Sherlock that draws people to him to this level of almost obsession? I mean, in Moriarty's case, absolutely obsession. But what is it about him? Like, yes, he's clever and he does these seductions and everything, but so does Mycroft. So does Ulyss. It's not unusual within their family. It seems like their mother does as well. So like, what's different about him other than being the youngest?
Well, I don't know about Mycroft's obsession other than he finally saw someone worthy of to be like his adversary kind of thing. Someone else that he saw was almost on his level, but then wasn't, according to Moriarty. And with
Mycroft.
And then with Ulyss, you can kind of understand her draw to Sherlock more than Mycroft just because they were closer in age. And
yeah, I just
kind of being that younger sibling of always wanting to like be included, but then not having that emotional capacity, that kind of sociopathic level of not being able to properly express themselves or whatever.
Yeah, I know, I'll make a game of this. He wasn't ready to play that kind of game.
Yeah.
But like, I don't know, she said something about how he was her favorite, and I really wished they had expanded upon that more.
Mm-hmm.
As for someone as intelligent and dysfunctional as her to say something like that, the context of that statement would be so unique. It would just be truly interesting to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the whole 4th season felt like it was a lesson in context. So it would have been really great to get that.
Mm-hmm. I agree, considering how often she's all like, here's some context.
Mm-hmm.
So before I get too ranty about season four. Do you have a least favorite out of the other seasons? Like, what are your least favorite out of each?
I mean, season three, as enjoyable as it was also difficult for me to adjust to. Again, because Sherlock isn't known to be an emotional person. He is cold and calculating to a fault, like 99.9% of the time. But beyond that, the whole creation of Mary Watson as a super spy character was unexpected. And from the perspective of, ooh, a smart, capable, kind of ruthless woman, neat, that's cool. I can get on board with that, in a bubble, but I'm like, but this is Mary Watson. How do I reconcile this? And it took me a bit. I enjoyed it more during the rewatch, of course, because, well, it wasn't such a surprise. But it was such a departure from tradition, which hadn't really been the case in the first two seasons. Like, it was following along, modernized, yes, but it was following along, in accordance to my expectations. Here, it deviated, and I should have anticipated that that would mean that season four would be even more of a deviation, because what can you do to recover that at that point? But, before season four came out, this would have been my least favorite season.
Really? Okay. Okay, so out of the first, like, let's just, season four is not even in the running for favorite seasons. Let's be honest. There are
Yeah.
definitely points that I like you said, there's some really funny lines, I think some really great scenes and moments. But nothing really as a whole. So for me, I think season three might be my favorite. And it's so interesting because with you being more familiar with the stories and me not, how we kind of are differing there. I like this exploration of emotion in Sherlock, you know? I just think it's really interesting and fascinating to watch this person who says so much, you know, I'm a high functioning sociopath and devoid of feelings and uses love and emotions against people. And yet he is one of the most emotional people. I mean, even Mrs. Hudson knows how emotional he is because she understands because property damage. She understands more so than anybody else how emotional Sherlock is because he shoots the
Okay.
wall, he stabs the mantle, he whatever the hell else, you know, he does karate the fridge, as she says.
You know what,
So,
though? Now that you mentioned that, I enjoyed the depth that was added to Mrs. Hudson's character much, much more. Like, it felt less contrived. Like, I could totally buy her being okay with Sherlock being an addict, Sherlock being the way he is, because sure, her husband was a drug dealer who got murdered.
And she
And
was exotic dancing for a while and
she's
everything
so
too.
blasé about it, and I just, God, she is adorable in ways that probably shouldn't be adorable to
And she listens to Iron Maiden. Like, what
me.
the fuck? I love
She's
this lady.
vacuuming.
While she's
Yeah.
vacuuming, she's got the red sports car and everything, and she knew how to play Sherlock. And she knew how to play those American baddies that were looking for Irene Adler's phone. You know, to the point where, you know, they even fooled John and he's like, no, she's got to leave, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, nope, I'm fine. Here it is. Ha ha ha. So much
Yeah.
more capable and so underestimated. I absolutely agree. I love Mrs. Hudson. I would not change a thing about her. She stands up to Mycroft. She calls him an idiot. She tells everyone
She
in the
called him a
apartment.
reptile. That was
She did.
awesome.
Yes. And so when they get that, like, when they find the DVD and John finally watches it, and she kicks everyone out of the house, and they all leave because they don't want to disappoint Mrs. Hudson. Not because she's like, if you stay, then you're telling me you're a shitty person, and they all leave.
Yeah, that was amazing. Like, I really loved her in the show, which was A pleasant surprise to me, because I can tell you, as someone who's read the stories multiple times, I did not pay attention to her much in the slightest. Like, enough to know that she exists and she should, and this is, the purpose of her character, but like they made her much, much more important to me than I thought possible. And
And so much more important to Sherlock because he is very protective over her. Mycroft yells at Mrs. Hudson to shut up, and both Sherlock and John yell at Mycroft for it. And then Sherlock's like,
Exactly.
no, but really, shut up to Mrs. Hudson because it's like only he gets to tell her to shut up. But yeah, no, Mrs. Hudson was great in this, in all of this. And I loved her character. And she's just a hoot. She's not your landlady. Or no, she's not your housekeeper. She's your landlady. She's not a plot device, as she says in Abominable Bride. And you're just like, are you
Yeah.
sure about that?
Actually,
Yeah. But
for
yeah,
all of it.
I liked season three. I think usually when I start my rewatch, I usually start with The Empty Hearse
I
because
wonder.
I loved all the theories about how Sherlock survived the fall. And then I loved reading about how some of the theories that they showed in that episode were actually taken from some online theories. And
Yeah.
it's like after season two ends and you find out Sherlock's not actually dead, I am surprised that the fandom didn't collectively explode in that 2 years waiting for the series to come back, because I'm glad I caught up afterwards, because if I had to go through that, I would have exploded. The waiting. Oh my God, and he's alive and how and ah.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing. I know the history of the particular development of Sherlock dying and then not being dead. Like, the Reichenbach Fall is a play off of the death scene or supposed death scene of Sherlock and Moriarty falling over the Reichenbach Falls together while they were fighting. But there was, and it's funny that you mentioned, these theories were taken from the fandom because there was such an uproar about Sherlock's demise that Sir Arthur was kind of forced to bring him back. So with the Abominable Bride, I have some problems with that episode for sure, but I enjoyed the fact that they actually put that Reichenbach Falls scene in. That was cool. That was a good little tribute. But yeah, so when he died at the end of season two, I'm like, okay, fine. When does season three come out? And how are they going to explain this one in a modern context? Because that didn't involve a waterfall. Like, they just had the painting. So, okay, how are they going to do this? For me, it was a question of how, not a question of is he alive or not. So, the whole Anderson being the chief of the fan club of conspiracy theories was hilarious to me because I'm like, wow, you're on the right track, but you have no idea. And then also, you must be really guilty for your role in this. Really guilty.
Even Lestrade calls him out on it. He's like, this, Sherlock's gone and it's your fault. And none of your little theories in your fan club is going to change that and all of that. So I do
Right.
think it's absolutely hilarious that Anderson kind of does that 180, which is, fairly understandable. We don't see that from Donovan because we just kind of see her a little later during The Sign of Three in the very beginning. But nothing else really after the whole like Sir Boasts a Lot bit.
Yeah, which is true. He gets a bit full of himself at times.
And I also thought it was interesting in seeing who like Sherlock imagines, like while he's doing his mind palace or is deducing. A lot of times it's Mycroft, someone kind of that challenges him that I think Sherlock does see as more clever than him. Like deep down, he
Yeah.
would never say that out loud. But then in the episode where Mary shoots him, Sherlock not only like Molly's there in his imag, you know, in his hallucination or whatever, kind of makes sense given the context. But then Anderson too, like how did he sneak in there? Everyone else's appearance in his little like hallucination or whatever as he's falling, trying to figure out which way to fall, made sense. You know,
Well,
Moriarty stayed
Anderson's
in the
supposed to
basement.
be a forensics expert.
And that's really
So.
the only thing I could think. But still, with as much hate as Sherlock has for him, does he somehow develop a level of respect? Because he does tell Anderson how everything was done, you know, and then Anderson's like, but why would you tell me? Is this even true? And blah, 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 blah. So I don't know why. For some reason, this last time watching it, I just thought it was really interesting that Anderson made an appearance in his like mind palace. But
Yeah, I don't know. It served a purpose. And you know, Anderson was there again, along with Hooper in the Abominable Bride as well, that tongue twister. But he was like the assistant in the morgue. So it kind of fits his role, you know, as a on the police force, in my opinion anyway.
I can see that. We'll allow that. So, all right. So, yeah, with season one, Blind Banker is my least favorite. And it's a toss
Mine
up
too.
of favorite between obviously the first one and then The Great Game. Because, yeah, the first one, you get, I love how John and Sherlock meet each other and, you know, solve this multiple suicide and everything. It's a great way to kind of introduce all of these characters in this modern setting. But then episode three, The Great Game, we actually get to meet Moriarty. And like Moriarty, no matter what, knows how to make an entrance because in the first episode, his name is screamed by the cabbie, very dramatic like. And then he comes in as Jim from IT, and it's a workplace romance. And then when he reveals himself at the end in the swimming pool, his hi.
Yeah, okay.
Love
So
it.
when he showed up as Jim from IT the first time I watched it, I was like, Jim? No. No.
Not the gym.
Well, James. It was James in the books, but I'm like, no. That no. Like, and you know, him playing it as gay was hilarious. I love that. But I was like, okay, I have my theory. We're gonna see if this, and then of course he comes into the pool. Hi. Oh. And the thing is, I never read his voice like that, and it's never been portrayed like that in any show or movie up to this point. Always soft, comparative to Sherlock, but menacing. But this was like a whole different kind of soft.
I would almost go as I would almost say that it's a different level of menacing because it's that kind of because we know it's Moriarty, you know, at this point, right? And it's so it's like the soft, unassuming, almost innocent, like, hi, which can
Sing-songy.
be, yeah, which can be terrifying from a psychopath.
Like if you heard a doll in a horror movie say it like that, you'd be freaked out, right? That's the
Drop
kind
kick
of voice he has. And
that
I'm like, and then you know, when he has his little fits of rage on the phone call, like, wow, okay, so he can like flip the switch between being all sweet and everything to just being outright, I will kill you, MF-er. Like, okay, this is interesting. And here's my controversial opinion.
Ooh.
Because I have my villain thing, as you know, I love Moriarty almost as much as I love Sherlock. Now, this is controversial on a couple of things. I love the hero more than the villain for the first time, like ever. But also, I wanted more from Moriarty than just 2 seasons and some recorded messages played for season 4. I wanted more because he is so amazingly, brilliantly evil.
I
And
100% agree.
oh man, I would have loved it. And the two of them had a chemistry in their scenes, but also independently with other cast members that was just worth savoring. And I feel like it's weird to say when the seasons have episodes that are an hour and a half long. I feel like they rushed it.
You know what? I completely agree. I wanted more Moriarty. Andrew Scott is amazing, does such a great job with this modern on-screen version. And it was really shocking when he went as far as he did to try and get Sherlock, you know? Like, I really was like, no, that's not, he's alive somehow. I don't know how. I was more bothered by that than the fake death, and then Sherlock's fake death. It's like, no, we can't lose him.
See, we have a villain thing.
Absolutely.
But
Or an Andrew Scott thing, or both. It's fine.
that's my biggest complaint is we needed more Moriarty.
I agree. And I mean, at least he still pops up throughout, and he's still kind of like tormenting Sherlock in a way, but
But it's not the
yeah,
same.
it's not the same.
And the thing is, it was always meant to end for him in the Reichenbach Vault. If you're being true to Sherlock, that's got to happen. But did it have to happen so soon? No, it really didn't. And I think that that would have changed the whole premise of the show. It doesn't mean you couldn't have other elements in it, but we wouldn't have had to deviate so much from established Sherlock lore if they hadn't rushed the whole Moriarty thing, which makes me wonder. Was the plan initially 2 seasons and then everyone loved it so much they continued it? Or I'm just not sure.
I'm honestly not sure either. I feel like at one point I did know the answer to that, but with my mind condo, lots of things have to be deleted. So I
Yeah, I
don't
love how you call
recall.
it a mind condo instead of a mind palace.
It's smaller, but it's mine.
Fair
I
enough.
own it. But my thing, real quick, about Jim and IT, right? Because he's introduced as Molly's workplace romance.
Oh,
So,
Molly.
do you think, I mean, it's far more likely that Jim hung around places at work to strike up that relationship with Molly. But I also would not put it past Jim Moriarty to actually go through the hiring process to work in IT to really sell that. What do you
Yeah, I
think?
mean, I could, but also he was just capable of falsifying the whole documents and everything anyway, so hard to say. I mean, if he wanted more entertainment out of it, maybe he'd go through the hiring process and it'd be hilarious, and you'd be questioning why they would hire someone like him in the first place. But Molly is an interesting thing. She was only meant to be like a standoff, one-time character, but she did such a great job. They made her a recurring character, and it just worked for me. Again, I could accept these changes to Mrs. Hudson and Molly's presence and all that because they made it work without taking away from the core of what makes Sherlock Sherlock, what makes Watson Watson, what makes their dynamic so special. I really love the respect to the source material that was paid during those first 2 seasons. Again, I'm, like you said, I'm a book nerd on this, so I'm going to be caught up in that. But I wonder, is the third season your favorite because that's where you started? That was your initial Sherlock impression.
It might be. I mean, because like with the empty hearse, not only do we get the fun theories and the eventual explanation and everything, but Sherlock and John's reunion is one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life. Like once like the that whole thing from the fancy restaurant to John and Mary leaving in the cab and Mary being like, I'll work on him. This like automatic attraction between John and Mary, or not John and Mary, but Sherlock and Mary. Not like, sexual or anything, but they are very much drawn to each other. They very much like each other, care about each other. They have conversations away from John where after Mary has the baby, Sherlock's like, you've put on 7 pounds. And John's like, it's four. And Sherlock's like, Mary and I think it's seven.
Or I love the text conversations. Come and do this, working on it. Mary says it's okay.
Yes. I've already checked. Yeah.
I love that because, the big fear during their wedding that he was feeling was, is it still going to be the same between him and Watson? And it is, but it's almost like it's better because, and this is where I love Mary's twists in her character because I actually feel like she makes it even more fun between the two of them sometimes. To the point
Absolutely.
where, when she met her demise, I was actually sad about it.
Yes.
And
I
not just
love.
because, Watson loves her and they have a child and like all that. I'm just like, oh, I was really getting into this dynamic and I'm surprised at myself for it.
I also love how in The Sign of Three, during one of like the wedding prep kind of flashbacky bits, John and Mary have a moment where they're talking about taking Sherlock out on a run and trying to find him a case. And then 2 seconds later, Mary and Sherlock are having that same conversation, but about John. And then that final shot where John and Sherlock are standing in different doorways and Mary's giving them both a thumbs up. The way she plays them both and the way she doesn't buy Sherlock's bullshit, I absolutely love it. She's like, I'm not John, I'm clever.
Oh, poor John. It's
But
not like he's stupid either. I want to be clear
no,
on that. He never
he's not.
was. Like, is he closer to ordinary? Yes, but he never struck me as an ordinary person, even in the books.
But I want to go back to Molly real quick, because I got a little sidetracked as we do. But I love Molly Hooper, and I feel like this show did her dirty.
Oh,
They
they so did. I hated it.
I fucking hate it so much. And it's like, I initially with her being, having the crush and everything, that's fine. But by season four, I feel like her character could have been developed up more. And it's just 4 seasons of her pining for Sherlock, thinking she's over Sherlock by dating Wish version Sherlock.
That was
And
exactly what that was.
everyone saw it. I hate that she had that moment of like delusion of like, I'm over him. Molly deserved better, plain and
Yes,
simple. One
but
of the
as
most
far
heart.
as
Well, I was just going to say one of the most heartbreaking Molly moments is in season four, which is part of the problem that I have with the final problem with that episode. I fucking hate it so much. It pisses me off, but I do like seeing that outburst of emotion from Sherlock. Again, these moments of dramatic emotional outbursts from him, I eat it up for whatever
See,
reason.
now I both agree and disagree with you. Season four has a lot of faults.
A lot.
But as far as doing Molly Hooper dirty, I feel like she deserved better for herself, like from herself. And she never got that chance. And we can only hope that she gets that chance, outside of the scope of what we get to see. But like,
Absolutely.
I don't hate the show for having that moment in it because if they wanted to show just how cold and calculating someone with a mind like that can be, how cruel they can be, and how someone with that level of, I don't know if it's psychopathy or if it's sociopathy, it doesn't matter to me, but someone with that level of it could be so detached from the emotional damage that they cause. That was the moment they achieved it, I think. Because it didn't involve her actually killing them like she did in the previous rooms. This was all a ploy. Just because she's sadistic. But doesn't really understand the emotions themselves. She just likes seeing them because it's like making your toys do something. So I don't know. I thought that put more depth into just the absolute crazy going on.
And that's a very good point, you know, because the whole time they think that Molly's apartment is rigged with a bomb and everything, you know, and Sherlock's like, I saved her. I saved Molly. And
I
Eunice is like, did you
won.
really? Did you really look at her? Are you crazy? Why would I put a bomb? That's too messy. And
It
Eunice has valid
also,
points.
right, but it also shows Sherlock's still very much Sherlock. I
Yes.
won, he said. He didn't just say I saved her, I won. So he still has that underlying motivation, even though there's the emotional element of it too. So she was playing both sides of his personality, the repressed side and the side that he shows the public at the same time. And it worked well with the whole premise of how she was toying with him and why, you know, when we get to all the Redbeard stuff. So I didn't hate it, but I hated what it meant for Molly.
Yeah, I guess that's more what I like, 'cause I love it, but I also hate it because I for a lot of the reasons you just said. I just because by that point too, and on numerous rewatches, I'm just like I want so much more for Molly. And I love that you mentioned like basically kind of finding peace within herself and how we don't ever see. I literally have a note that says that that
Oh, that's awesome.
my hope is that, you know, during the end, and we kind of get that little bit of a montage of everyone come together and the found family and being happy and whatnot. I like to think that at that point, Molly is good with herself, is confident in herself and her choices and comfortable and all of that, and not still pining and puppy eyes and like has fully moved on. I just that's the one of the things about the overall series that just makes me Superman is the mistreatment of Molly. It's just kind of a classic, like a woman has to suffer so a man can advance kind of thing. And I think they could have done that and still given Molly depth.
Yeah, I agree. But you know, for someone that was not meant to be a recurring character, I was still happy that she was continually included. So
Absolutely.
there is that.
And there are these small moments where Sherlock, like at first, Sherlock doesn't understand, you know, obviously doesn't understand, you know, emotions and love and all of that. But he comes to understand that he treats Molly like shit. The whole Christmas part,
Yeah, that was
where,
awful.
oh my God, I hate it so much. But I think it was in that moment Sherlock truly realized like how terrible he is to her, whether he realizes or not. And he kind of comes to that conclusion when he's planning his, you know, death. You know, he goes to Molly and he's like, you know, there's one thing they didn't account for, and that's how important you are. 'Cause she was not included. You know, Moriarty did not factor her in with
Not to the degree that he should have. But just like Sherlock, he dismissed her. He undervalued her. So they had these parallels between them that was just brilliant.
Yeah, but Sherlock does kind of have these moments where he at least is trying to be like a better friend, I think, or more aware of what he says and how he says it to her. Because I don't think he wants her to feel that way, but I don't know that he can help it when he says
No,
it
and some
and
of it's on
emotionally
her too.
manipulates her.
Like she knows the type of person that Sherlock is. And to some degree, she chooses to put herself in denial about it.
But all right, I think I got everything off my chest about Molly because I've been holding that in for a couple of years now. So, all right, so with season two, real quick, I'm gonna go. So, for season two, my favorite episodes, I mean,
How do you pick a favorite in season two?
it's really kind of hard. Scandal in Bulgaria is great because, you know, Irene Adler enters the game
She's my favorite.
and I love this like modern version of her dominatrix and She knows her phone just by weight. Like, silly. But I also, again, like the Reichenbach Fall, that's such a great episode, I think, from beginning to end. And I think my least favorite out of the three would be Hounds of Baskerville. And it's
Which
not a
is
bad
funny.
episode. It's a great episode. And I think I love this moment where Sherlock is like legitimately afraid of what did I actually see? What did I actually experience? Another kind of emotional side of Sherlock that we don't see really ever or at all. But he has that moment. And I love it. And, it's kind of spooky and it's got Alonzo, Doctor Who,
I'm
Alonzo,
glad you mentioned
Alonzo.
Doctor Who because there's more than one.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Adelaide, Lady Smallwood, but Lazarus, Project Lazarus. So
Yeah.
not lost on me. But yeah, Hounds is a great episode and everything. It's a great mystery. The performances were spot on, I think, especially from quote Alonzo, because now I can't think of what his character's name is in that episode.
No, I can't either.
But that, just with him being so scared and I don't know. It's a great episode, but it's not my favorite out of the three.
I can understand that, but from the literary side, that this is probably the most famous of the stories because it has all of those elements, a bit of the spooky, supernatural, and all that stuff. And it really puts Sherlock and his detective skills into another scope, like another context. So I appreciated how they modernized it because I really wasn't sure how they were going to do that. But even with, everything that I know about it as its original story, I agree that it is my least favorite episode of season two. And not because it's a bad episode in any way. But when you sandwich it between the woman, I'm sorry,
It
but
didn't
from a
really stand a
TV
chance.
perspective, I don't know how you can follow Irene Adler. And there have been a lot of interesting twists with her character in various iterations of Sherlock in like TV and movies and everything. I could spoil other shows for the twists, but I won't. So, but I, the one common theme that I've seen in modern takes with her is they give her more screen time. They give her more of an opportunity to display why she is so highly respected by Sherlock Holmes. And it's important that they do that because one of Sherlock's core characteristics that make him more of an anti-hero than a hero, I guess, in the stories, and is definitely a failure of him as a person, but appropriate for the time period in a weird way, he is the world's biggest misogynist. But in these more modern takes, it's more like he doesn't understand the interpersonal relationships, the romantic relationships, or see the value of them from a practical perspective, rather than women are inferior because they're women, which I liked that they took that away and made it something else, something more relatable and less inflammatory. So but it is significant that even when he was the misogynist that he was in the books, he admired and respected her as much as a misogynist can, so much. Like, she was amazing and formidable, and I am glad that she's turned into the character that she's turned into in modern interpretations because I love her so much, and these only just make me love her more.
Yeah, I enjoy the Scandal in Bulgaria episode a lot. I love watching Irene and Sherlock kind of go back and forth and these long stares into each other's eyes, Irene a little bit more puppy dog, and Sherlock more like you're an inch from my face. And then John just being like, "Hi, I'm still in the room. I'm still here. Pay attention to me, please."
In those moments, I just want to be like, dude, Watson, read the room. Get out.
Right? So I love it. I love that, Sherlock feels the need to impress her and everything, and her whole like, I would have you on the table and begging for mercy twice and all of this. Like, it's just their dynamic, their interactions in this are great. They're so much fun. And then at the end, when he goes and saves her, it's just like, oh, like
Yeah.
Ghost Mary says, oh, the little posh boy saves the dominatrix. He's never knowingly under cliche, is he?
Right. But like I was saying, though, sandwich the Hound in between that and Reichenbach Fall. How do you make that episode shine? Because those are two of the most like remarkable moments in Sherlock Holmes' timeline as a detective and as a person.
I mean, yeah, obviously a great episode. I love that they have their little encounter, their little kind of sit down, having tea in Sherlock's flat.
Yeah.
And kind of that moment of Moriarty going up the stairs and the violence stopping and Moriarty stopping. And because on some of the special features, because I own it on digital, so it did come with some of the special features, they did show like a side by side of like one of the original on screen iterations of Sherlock and that scene of Moriarty walking up the steps and the violin playing. So I like that, at least in this version, there's homages. I mean, it's just like chock full of Easter eggs from Paige to even previous on-screen versions. So you got to appreciate it for that, if
I
nothing
do.
else, for the series as a whole. So I loved this idea that Moriarty just completely erases his identity, comes up with something new. I hope that journalist Kitty no longer has a job.
Yeah.
whatever. Yeah, it's just, I don't know. It's so good. And then the whole rooftop scene and everything. It's just, I don't know. It's so good. All the twists and whatnot. And yeah, it's kind of hard to top that one out of this season. So
Yeah, I felt a little like because I've read the stories, when I saw the title of the episode, I'm like, oh no, bye
yeah.
bye, Moriarty. So it
Oh,
kind of
such a
spoiled all
bummer.
that for me, but I still very much enjoyed the episode. I don't know, for season three, series three, whatever you want to call it. I think that my least favorite episode was Many Happy Returns, just because, come on, Sherlock, come back already. Like I feel like this season took a bit to get going because they had to bring him back and deal with the emotional repercussions. But at least the emotional repercussions were hilarious in the end.
Yeah, I love that, in the fancy restaurant and Sherlock reveals himself. He obviously can tell that John's pissed, but it does not stop him from roasting him about his mustache.
Right.
And that's
Deservedly so.
hilarious.
But
Yeah.
it's also funny because Watson is historically a mustache character. But it was just, yeah, it was funny. And I enjoyed the humor of it. But I really like, I wanted him to be back properly. And I wanted to return to that dynamic and, get involved in the cases again. Because like the reason that I love Sherlock as a character, regardless of portrayal, is that it's just art of deduction. And like it's the most enthralling thing about the show for me when he's figuring something out. It's like it's like I'm a junkie for that, and this is my fix.
Yeah, I do like how Magnuson was the one that ultimately brought John and Sherlock back together by throwing John into a fire. I mean, not quite a
Yeah, good
fire,
old
but
Guy
like gonna
Fawkes
be.
Day.
Yeah. But and then at the end, when they find the bomb and the train car and everything, I also want to say that I'm very disappointed that Sherlock didn't think to count the train cars first when he's at the train enthusiast guy's house.
Yeah, that one was surprising me. I feel like he slipped a little bit, but
Yeah.
I don't know.
Do you think he was just too distracted about not having John there because he's hearing John's voice as he's investigating this,
That was
skeleton?
what I thought. I thought it was, a subtle nod to the fact that Sherlock is still brilliant without Watson, but he's better for having him. And I perhaps rationalized something that was just a mistake.
But when they're in the train car and they find the bomb and everything, and Sherlock kind of has a moment where he's like begging for John's forgiveness about the whole faking death and everything, and it feels genuine until after the whole explanation and everything, and the bomb doesn't actually go off because there was actually an off switch.
Which that was one of those moments where I'm like, oh, geez, okay, fine.
Exactly. But then it's like Sherlock's like, oh, you should have seen your face. And then it's like,
Well,
all
he's
right,
got to find
buddy.
a way to be genuine, but then still uphold his,
True.
asshole reputation, nature, general way of doing things. I think without that twist, I think it would have been too much of a departure of who Sherlock is as a person.
I can see that. All right, so also within season three, is there one that you that's not your favorite? That kind of it's the bottom of these three for three.
Well, if we're going on the cases and everything, I had some problems with his last vow. Magnuson was interesting. And the solution to the problem, though, seemed too obvious. And normally, like, you're supposed to feel kind of like Watson in the show. You're following these cases and you kind of get it, but there's so many little details that you missed. But cinematically, they focused several times on Magnuson descending this staircase into his. I'm like, why are they focusing on how he gets there? And then I was like, oh, never mind. I know what's happening. I know what's happening. I know how this is going to end. And when Sherlock shot him, I was like, yep, called it. But I'm disappointed because instead of Sherlock pulling the trigger, it should have been Mycroft giving that order. But Mycroft, as he's proven in season four with his sister, cares more about how useful someone is to him than what the right thing to do is.
And he even says that about Magnuson to Sherlock, that like, Magnuson never really like he's more important than he is dangerous, and he never really targets anyone of importance. So they just kind of let him be. Just like, what the fuck? Yeah. And then in season four too, Mycroft says that he took a calculated risk by letting Moriarty see Euros. And I'm just like, you need a new calculator, dude, because that was not smart. There's how in what way could that have ended up any other way but terrible?
Yeah, I calculated the risk, but it turns out I got the wrong answer.
Yeah, with his last vow, I mean, yes, Magnuson is very interesting as a villain. He is just disgusting and he's gross. He just so disrespectful too, and so
He's
arrogant, and
vile.
he's vile. Just the way he licks Lady Smallwood's face.
Oh, that
Ugh.
really unnerved me.
Oh my God,
Like,
it's so uncomfortable.
even more than him peeing in the fireplace at Baker Street. Like, the licking of the face just really unnerved me.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that is a line that he crossed. Yeah, peeing in someone's apartment is also a line, but this is like personal space and all of that. Like, ugh. So it was satisfying though to watch him be shot in the face.
Absolutely. I just, for the briefest moment, I allowed myself to hope that when they repeated for Sherlock and Watson to step away from him, they were going to shoot him. Like that Mycroft would be willing to take that shot so his brother didn't have to. But then he
But
didn't. And I was like, oh, did I read his character development wrong?
well, I think it was more to show just how important Mary is to Sherlock. You know,
I
Mary and
agree.
John, but I mean, like
I
Sherlock's
guess.
literally willing to murder someone to keep Mary safe.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I guess I was just hoping that they would demonstrate how important Sherlock is to Mycroft in that moment.
I mean, I guess you can kind of deduce that from when Mycroft is like, "Oh, Sherlock, what have you done?" kind of thing, you know? And then he's like, "I'm not prone to outbursts of brotherly emotions or
Compassion. I
whatever." And
wasn't
it's
before. That
like,
wasn't the
"Yeah, you
last
kind of are."
time.
Yeah. kind of so with this episode, his last vow, this is where we find out about Mary's past because of Magnuson and everything, and that she was an assassin and special agent and whatnot. And I have to say, like, I'm a bit conflicted about that. Like, I don't mind, I guess, kind of hearing the stories or just like this idea that she was. But then between this episode and season four, episode one, we actually kind of see her doing some, secret agent type stuff. And I don't know, it just, she did not look right in the spy getup, in the special agent
Yeah,
assassin
I wasn't
getup.
buying
It
it.
was, it just kind of looked awkward and maybe a little clumsy. And so it really kind of takes you out in that moment. I think it was a bit more interesting when she's talking about having to like run away and remove, move the target as far away from John and Rosie as possible. So we see her, traveling the world, various disguises and
Yeah, that was more
aliases and all that.
fun.
That was more fun. I thought where it was put was kind of odd. I mean, it does make sense, contextually or whatever, but it just kind of ends at, because like Sherlock's there and he put a tracker on her and everything, and then John's there and then AJ's there and
Yeah, it's like, okay, super spy assassin person, you didn't think to check for a tracker? I'm just like, come on.
but I love that. I love the little moment. Again, this is just another one of those like Sherlock Mary moments where they're kind of having a laugh about it, because he's bullshitting her and she's like, nope, try again, and he's like, so I just put a tracker on there or whatever. And she's like, oh, mathematic probabilities and, just repeating the bullshit Sherlock was spouting. And they're having a laugh. And then there's John all irritated as per usual.
Yeah.
So it was just kind of, it was a choice.
Yeah, sometimes I feel like they're a throuple.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But I do like the thing that I do like about this episode too is talking about how John himself, I mean, even more like really kind of hitting home that John himself is a junkie in his own right. Like he
He
just
is.
could not wait to go in and kick some crack ass. And it was fun to watch. I loved watching him sprain Billy Wiggins's arm because he knows how to sprain people and just everything in that kind of opening scene was fun.
It was. And I immediately got pulled out of this episode in the rewatch though when AJ showed up because I'm like, oh, that's the master. I have to confirm this.
Yes, it's the master. Yeah, it's kind of hard now, especially on the rewatch, to be like, no, you're not AJ.
Yeah, who's this AJ? Go be Doctor Who's arch nemesis again. Because as far as the Jodie Whittaker season goes, that was probably my favorite part of it, that the Master returning.
I agree, and I actually really loved the reveal too.
Me too. But
There was something sussy about it, and then when it was revealed, I was like, oh my God. Like, didn't see it coming completely, was still a bit surprised, but loved every second of it. And I was like, it all makes sense
yeah.
now.
But season four, oh boy.
Well, before we move on to season four, anything to say about the signs of three? It's kind of like, the best man speech. It's like a clip show with new clips kind of
Look,
thing.
if you're gonna do a clip show, I think this was a really good way to do it. And I loved how it just turned into solving another case. Well, two cases at once, actually. I really enjoy the episode. It makes you cringe, it makes you cry, it makes you laugh, and then it gets right back to business. And then Sherlock leaves the wedding early, which kind of makes you think, oh no, is the friendship over? But it's not. So, but it gives you that moment of, oh, I'm unsure right now. I think as far as TV goes, it was well done.
I thought that, with Sherlock leaving the wedding early, I thought it was a lot more sad kind of this last watch, because you see him looking around the reception, wanting to maybe enjoy it. He even spots Janine, the bridesmaid, but she's already dancing with someone else, because he for a second looks happy and relieved to see her and starts kind of like he's gonna head towards her. And when he realizes there's really nobody else he can or wants to talk to or hang out with, he leaves.
Yeah.
And I think, like Mrs. Hudson says, that's kind of sad. So, because I think before I
I'm...
always just took it as like, it's a social thing, it's not Sherlock's thing. Of course he's leaving early. But he
Oh,
really
really? I
wants
didn't
to.
get that impression the first time. Like,
I mean, I didn't really put a lot of a whole heck of a lot of thought into it. I guess I just kind of, him leaving a wedding early just wasn't all that surprising to me, but now catching
no,
how
I
he
suppose
looks
not.
around, I'm just like, he wanted to
But
have fun.
Mrs. Hudson foreshadowed it earlier in the episode that, it meant the end of her friendship with her best friend. So they were implying that that was possible, and it was a very cruel thing to do. So I didn't miss the implication the first time around. So the one thing that I appreciate his last vow for is that it quickly discarded the idea of that. But I also really loved the dynamic between Sherlock and Janine at the wedding. Just the way she was using him to shop. It was amusing.
Those two, especially in that episode, are a lot of fun to watch, because then, yeah, he solves the case, the Mayfly man, and it's the photographer, and he handcuffs him, and Janine's like, you always go around with handcuffs? And he's like, down, girl. And I'm like, okay, that's flirting.
Yeah.
You're flirting. And I loved it so much.
I did too.
I always this I think this is like the funniest episode. Between the speech and the clip shows of, these clips of cases that we've never seen in the series before. And it's just done a little differently from the other times where we get these little brief montages, mentions of past cases and, the different blogs that John has published and everything. So I thought this was. It was just an interesting, different kind of take to it, I thought. And then again, the whole stag party thing, those two just going out and drinking at bars where dead bodies were found, because of course that's what they do. Sherlock trying to calculate how much alcohol they can drink to maintain just like a nice buzz.
And
And
Watson
then just.
sabotaging the effort.
And then still getting home like before bar time. It's what, like 8, 9 o'clock or something? It's like super early. And then trying to investigate while hammered. And
Yes.
then my favorite Lestrade moment ever was when he goes in and pulls him out of the drunk tank And John's like, "Can you be a little quieter?" And he just yells in his face, like,
Yeah.
"Nope, I don't
Yeah.
think so." I was like, "Yes, victory!" I was so happy for Greg in that moment.
Me too.
So, but and then of course one of the best lines is, when they figured it out and they figured out who the target is, and Mary tells Sherlock, solve it, solve the Mayfly Man or the, whichever case. And he's like, I can't. She's like, yes, you can, because it matters now. And then John's like, yeah, you're not a puzzle solver. You never were. You're a drama queen. And the look of shock on Sherlock's face. And then John just being like, you're a drama queen. The game is on. So solve it. Like, just the mocking, but the I love everything about that whole little bit.
Yeah,
And
I would
then,
say this is my favorite episode for sure
yeah, this
of
I
the
love this
season.
episode. Yeah, I love this episode. And then again, we have this nice moment of sentiment where, Sholto, John's former CO, he's like, I'll die by my own hands or whatever. And Sherlock is like, we wouldn't do that to John. And
Yeah,
that
that
sinks
was
in.
a good way to get him to, like, I don't know, be
I just,
sensible.
yeah, I just love that dash of, yeah, sensibility, sentiment. Also, one more thing. When Sherlock is at the wedding, I think before he does his best man speech, who does he just randomly call? His brother. Aww.
Yeah, that was surprising.
Yeah, I. It's so cute. These weird sibling ways that they kind of show each other that they care about each other without having to actually say it or do anything.
No,
Like
it was
more
nice.
traditional, like they don't hug.
It was perfect for them
It really
in the
was.
context of the show.
Yep. All right. Are you ready to poop on Abominable Bride and season four even more so than we have been?
Yep.
All right, let's start with Abominable Bride, the one that actually takes place in Vicky London. So that is fun. This is a fun episode.
Yeah, like as far as period piece goes, there's a lot of details about it that I'm like, oh, but also I'm like, no. Like, for
Yes.
example, the Abominable Bride in her opening scene where she's shooting at everyone, you, and it's like, that's a proper revolver. She doesn't have to pull the hammer back every time. That's not accurate.
Oh I love that that's what you picked up on.
I'm like, oh man, can't rewatch this. I can't do it. And then I did anyway.
Yeah, I kind of have I'm a little back and forth. Like this is kind of a 50-50 for me. Like I love this episode, but I also kind of don't like this episode.
I feel the same way. Like,
My
oh, Watson's off-the-cuff joke about it being the suffragist. I'm like, of course it is. That's been the underlying theme of the whole thing from the beginning. And like, I like that Sherlock, who, as I previously mentioned in the books, is a raging misogynist. In this, he was on the side of the suffragists. But I don't know. I feel like the whole premise was too shallow.
I agree. I like this was I think this was nothing more than just a fun self-referencing episode. We finally get Sherlock and Watson and Vicky London, and we get our characters that we know and love from the modern day kind of in these different roles. Molly Hooper is pretending to be a man to
That was
be
great.
employed. Anderson not seeing it. The only one
And
seeing it is John.
Watson seeing it right away. I'm like, oh, good on you for being a doctor for once. It's like every now and then we need a reminder that he is a doctor. Like he does know things that Sherlock does not know.
I never thought of it that way, but you're absolutely right.
Every season has to have one token. Oh yeah, Watson's the doctor
Yep.
moment. And this being its own standalone special, absolutely delivered. Here was my favorite twist in
Yeah.
The Abominable Bride, Mycroft. I knew he was
Mycroft.
supposed to be a hedonistic, obese, lazy, but super intelligent, like spider sitting in the middle of the web kind of person. And he always makes these jokes in the seasons about Sherlock doing the legwork because he doesn't like it. But in this episode, he needed Sherlock to do the legwork because he couldn't. And I'm like, that's what Mycroft is supposed to be. And they made little references to, oh, you're dieting again. Oh, you're exercising again. And I'm like, okay, when are they going to show him as a fat person?
Yes.
Because he's supposed to be a fat person. If you're going by the historical description of the characters. And just like Watson is supposed to have a mustache. And I love that they make that go away because it's not fitting with the times. But I just love that they finally did it. They finally put him in a stupid fat suit. Just for that one special episode. And the fact that he had a bet with Sherlock about
Yes.
how much longer he was going to live, and he was deliberately shortening his life.
Tick tock, tick
I'm like,
tock.
oh my God, you really do hate yourself. Like, I am seeing the self-loathing that you have very clearly for the first time ever.
Yes. It was because I know in previous conversations, about the series before even Abominable Bride came out, you had told me that Mycroft is supposed to be on the heavier side. And so it was always just kind of like, all right, well, obviously the actor isn't. So, they're gonna kind of write it in that he's not. Sure, fine. But so when this popped up, I was like, I was just tickled pink.
Yes,
I
I remember laughing hysterically.
I love it. And then again with the no talking club, and bless John's heart and his attempt at sign language. And but because of that, I'm pretty sure I know the sign for potato. But
See, we learned things. Although this would be British Sign Language and not
exactly.
American,
That's
so.
right. So who knows what it might be in ASL, but
Look it
thank you for enjoying my potato or whatever.
He
Oh, I love it. I love it so
was doing
much.
really well, and then he wasn't.
Yes. So this was, but I, so there's a lot of, like I said, I like kind of like the ghosty aspect of it. I like, again, how there's a lot of moments in this episode that mirror a lot of the events that have happened in the series up to this point, from how they meet. To even little Archie carrying the bag. He's like their little bellboy kid. I don't know, but because he's in the Signs of Three as like the ring bearer and everything. And Sherlock's like, here, there's some dead bodies. And he's like, neat. So, and then, but yeah, this whole thing about it being the women and Mycroft being like, we most certainly must lose to this group. Rising. I like that they incorporated Mary's past spyness, but into working for Mycroft
Yeah.
rather than just being like an independent. But in a way, she did kind of work for Mycroft, or at least Lady Smallwood. Anyway, I just, it was, it was a bit preachy, a bit on the nose, and too woke. And I just,
It feels
I
weird
don't.
saying that because, I empathize with all of that. I do. And
Yeah.
I do think it's an important piece of history and everything.
Absolutely.
But I really wish it didn't have to be that because it didn't have to be that.
It didn't. No.
They could have shown their support for it, all throughout the episode without it having to be a plot device, if they really wanted to. But it did feel like it was really doubling down on, hey, Sherlock isn't a misogynist anymore.
Yeah.
We didn't need that. I don't know. It just, yeah, it felt shallow. It, a
Yeah.
lot of the same criticisms that came out of Jodie Whittaker's Doctor Who season. Like, it was trying too hard.
Yeah.
And that was the part that really, brought it down for me. The other part being, as I mentioned earlier, he went from nicotine patches to full on overdosing on a cocktail of hard drugs. Like,
Yeah.
that was jarring. And I don't understand why that was introduced then.
Well, I mean, because, oh, yeah, because that's. Well, I mean, they do allude it because he is in the crack house. Sherlock is in the crack house in the previous episode. Because that's where John
That's
finds him.
true, but they check him out and he's clean at that point.
No, he wasn't clean.
I thought he was. Maybe I'm
No, because
mistaken.
I think that's the one where they get their neighbor's son from the smack house and Sherlock, and then John's like, calling Molly. He's like, Sherlock Holmes needs to pee in a cup. And that's when Molly slaps him a bunch. And she's like, how
Yeah.
dare you throw away these beautiful gifts? So, I don't remember if they actually said if it was dirty, but her reaction definitely implied that he had drugs in his system.
I thought they said he was clean, but she was angry with
No.
him for putting himself in that situation regardless. But maybe I
Maybe.
got that one wrong.
Well, because then there's also in The Lying Detective, they bring in Molly to do another drug test. But so maybe it's then where she's like, this amount of drugs in your system should kill a person or something like
Yeah,
that.
if you
But
keep
yes,
taking the
what you're
things you're
taking.
taking as much as you're taking them, you will die in a matter of weeks, something
Yes.
like that.
Okay.
That
So I think,
was during The Lying Detective.
okay. So I guess I'm getting, maybe getting those two parts confused, either way, where was I going with that? Where's my notes? I think I scrolled too far. Shit. Anyway, on to the next thing. I'm sorry. I completely lost where I was going
That's
with
all right.
any of that. Okay, so yeah, back to the Abominable Bride. Oh, and the overdosing and everything. So I liked it was kind of interesting that this is really when they kind of hit home with the addiction to drugs,
To
the opium.
everything.
Opium or cocaine. And, but it, I guess, in a way, it kind of makes sense because now, because they kind of deduce that he was already high before he got on the plane to be exiled. And it's like, okay, knowing that he's going to be exiled, of course he's going to be high because he's got no case to work on and he's already kind of preparing for this next stage of his shitty life and most certain death. But then it becomes like an obsession where he needs that to try and figure out the Moriarty thing in at the same time as the Amelia Recoletti case and the parallels between that and how he's already gone through the trouble of an overdose to prove that Moriarty is dead. Like, oh my God. So it was kind of an interesting choice to really bring in the addiction factor there.
Yeah, I just think they went from 0 to 60 a little too fast.
Yeah, I could see that. And then again, we have another moment of Mycroft showing deep concern for Sherlock, with Sherlock needing to make a list after that one time. And we see a small flashback of a younger Moriarty or a younger Mycroft and a younger Sherlock in a smack house. Sherlock's probably going through withdrawal or something, with Mycroft there. And again, it's these moments of brotherly compassion Mycroft does actually have for Sherlock. And it's like, again, being that older sibling, seeing what his family has already been through, it does make sense that he does care so much. And it was really kind of sad when Sherlock ripped up the list. He's like, I don't need this. You don't need this. I've got a real case now. And Mycroft stops to pick it up. Because it's
Yeah.
still important, because he still needs to know. The list still counts. And I
Right.
always hated how mean Sherlock was to Mycroft when he's like, just grant me a pardon like a proper big brother. Like, dude, look, I get you're probably still high and all fucked up and everything, but that was uncalled for. That was
Yeah,
just mean.
but very true to Sherlock, so
Yeah,
I
yeah.
wasn't upset by it. It's
What did
weird
you,
what we're willing to accept.
right? So, what did you think about the inclusion of Moriarty in the Victorian London bits of Abominable Bride?
I think it was appropriate because it was more of an inner torment thing. And, Sherlock did say that he needed to go deep within himself. Of course, Moriarty's going to be there in some capacity. Like I said, they actually did the scene from, his literary demise. So I enjoyed that little tribute. What I didn't anticipate was that that was going to, lead to more posthumous activity by Moriarty, but not really. Like, maybe I would have been happier with it if it was actually like posthumous games that Moriarty set up, but it wasn't really Moriarty. He was just a tool. And I think that's the crux of the problem for me, the reduction of Moriarty to nothing more than a tool
Sorry.
was insulting.
I would have like I liked the inclusion of Moriarty kind of throughout the episode itself, but it felt like really the end conclusion to that was very anticlimactic.
Yes.
They have a tussle, but then John shows up because he's like, I know when I'm in a story as a storyteller, blah blah blah. And then it's like, it's always going to be these two. And now it's John's turn to like kick Moriarty off the waterfall. And he's just like, ah. And I'm just like, okay. You just had to figure out how to wrap it up somehow. And I don't know. You threw a dart at a wall and picked something. I don't know. It seemed like there was a lot of build up with this inclusion of the Moriarty, yes, as an internal torment, but then I don't know, just John being like,
I mean, yeah, but I wasn't as bothered by that for two reasons, because this was all in Sherlock's head. But also, like I said, historically, Sherlock gets brought back because fans wanted him back. So yeah, they had to do some unplanned, dumb retcon of the final showdown between them to make that happen. So it was kind of like that. And I'm like, yeah, okay, that's kind of a tribute, so I'm gonna go with it. It didn't really bother me as much, I guess. But I had that context work from, like, as soon as they showed the waterfall, I'm like, oh, they're gonna have the worst fight. 'Cause I mean, like, Sherlock kind of knows how to fight, but Moriarty just seems like he doesn't know what he's doing. He's just vicious. And it definitely looked that way with their tussling with each other. And it's like, oh, this is so awkward. Why am I cringing?
That's hilarious. All right, let's see. Some good things about Abominable Bride. I mean, I like, when Lestrade shows up and he's telling the story about the bride. I like how that was all filmed with kind of the flat in the street and the pausing and the rewinding. There's just a lot of these kind of what seem to be a bit of more practical effects kind of throughout the series that just I think make it a lot of fun. There's like the in the Irene Adler episode where after she tranquilizes him or whatever, and he's kind of like trying to explain like the boomerang case, but then he falls and he falls into bed and just I kind of these moments and how they're filmed and like I said, using the practical effects, I really enjoy. It makes a lot of fun, and they did that in Abominable Bride, which is kind of having the flat. It almost seemed like a diorama, like a shoebox set within a set. It just I really enjoyed that. They
I
got
did too.
they brought back Janine as one of the women part of the underground suffragist, and just kind of the way it incorporates everything from the series up to that point, this kind of back and forth of present day into Victorian London, showing that of reality bleeding into this drug-induced dream or hallucination, whatever you want to call it. So a lot of things that I like about this episode, but the overall message was like, like, yes,
Yeah.
we know.
Thank you.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right, season four, here we go. Which one do you have a favorite?
Okay. It's okay. No.
I'm sorry. Well, the fact that like your camera is still off, so I can't read you either. It just makes it that much more entertaining on my end.
Okay, it's stupid because I have no political leanings one way or the other that have an impact on this, but the imagery of smashing a bunch of Margaret Thatcher busts and the stupidity of and just at the same time, just awfulness of dying behind a fake car seat cover. Like
Oh my God,
in the Six
yes.
Thatchers, it's like, all right then, but those are my amusing takes from the first episode. Otherwise, it's not my favorite at all. The Lying Detective is the most traditionally Sherlocky episode of the lot, and it does bring home the whole, what did Mary ask him to do, and why is he doing this to himself? And it made the drug use, I don't want to say okay, because that just sounds wrong. Made it
Understandable.
understandable, forgivable, perhaps, I don't know. But I'm also like, I am really trying to understand how a man can be in double kidney failure and then in the next episode be fine. Like, when is he going to dialysis? Like, did he get a transplant? What happened? Like, that's not something you just sort of like get over. And I know that that shouldn't take away from the episode, but it does, because I'm like, it doesn't make sense. Watson is a doctor, he should know this. But oh God, I will give them this for Culverton Smith. Okay, Culverton, what kind of a name is that? Like, I understand that they're British,
It's so
and we're
British.
talking about Mycroft and Sherlock here, so not exactly normal names. But like Culverton, man, if they were going for a villain who looked as villainous as he is, they nailed it with that one. And it was a bit campy of them, and I don't know if I like that, because I'm like, oh, this feels like Hunchback of Notre Dame in some ways, and I don't like that. And then okay, so we get and then we get the final problem, which is, hello, middle child Eurus, the super genius, crazy as hell sister. It was good in a way that it humbled Sherlock, but also still showcased his abilities. It humbled Mycroft and also made him realize, hey, he's been a bit of a dumbass too. And Sherlock being there for his sister and all of that was very emotionally touching, which was nice and not something you normally get from Sherlock stories. Like, I really probably enjoyed the violin conversation between the two of them at the end of the episode more than I should have. I'm like, aw, that's so sweet. I'm like, this woman murdered your best friend when you were little kids. And she's killed so many people, and everyone's just like, it's okay because he is who she is. And
Yeah.
like, all right, no. Was satisfying because we finally got to the bottom of Redbeard, because that showed up much earlier. So I was glad we weren't left on a cliffhanger there. But I'm sorry, I just cannot go. This was my favorite episode. I can't. Like, there are things that I appreciate in terms of, creative choices and some of the lines from the show. Like, the dialogue does not reduce in quality in season 4 at all. There were good quotes throughout. Like, all this, but there are things that just irritate me about season 4 across the board. How about you?
So with season 4, my favorite, as I have said, is The Lying Detective. I love the serial killer angle. The actor that they have for Culverton Smith, Toby Jones, is so good at doing creepy. And because he's also in that one Doctor Who episode, was it Amy's Choice? Where they're sleeping and then awake, and Amy has to choose between Rory or the doctor. And so he's like whatever the dream weaver in that, kind of fucking with all of them. Also very unsettling, but in a slightly more fun way. Here he is just straight up creepy, 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 creepy. Like when he chews this, when he's like, does the cereal commercial and he spits the food in the bucket and then he says weird things to the girl that brings the bucket. Oh God, he's
You
just
should
so
sell
fucking
that on
gross.
eBay. You'll make
I can
a
make
fair amount of money on that. You can make
more.
more anytime you want. And I'm so,
Ugh.
But the serial killer part, the commercial, that was funny until that point. I'm like, oh, you ruined it. You ruined it. You
But
Why couldn't you just let me enjoy a good pun?
no shit. But I like this one, I guess, more for the story than kind of like the character development.
Yeah, I guess I can agree.
I get where John is a bit and what Sherlock has to do to save John, as it is explained at the end. There are some great moments. This is when Mrs. Hudson calls Mycroft a reptile. She's the one that figures out the thing that kind of triggered Sherlock to go down this path, and that's the Mary's DVD. And I like that, we're getting little glimpses of Euros. She comes in to the flat pretending to be Culvertson's daughter. And so like that whole little bit is kind of odd. It makes me wonder if she was somehow maybe in cahoots with Culverton Smith for a bit, or if she was just able to break into his daughter's apartment and steal the note that she had written out, because Euros had it and Sherlock found it in his apartment. But I really like this one. I like how John eventually comes around, because as Mary says, like, this is. John needs help and he's not going to ask for help. So I kind of like all of this. And I especially love at the end when Culverton Smith's like, oh, we found 3 recording devices in your jacket. And Sherlock's like, there's something oddly comforting about the number 3. People seem to stop at 3. And there was a 4th recording device, the cane that John ends up bringing over. But I there's it's something about that line and that whole idea about there's something comforting about the number. It's like, why do people stop at 3?
It's true. Well, in some cultures, 4 is an unlucky number, so that could
That's
be part of
true.
it. But you're right. From a story perspective, this wrapped up a lot of things quite nicely, and it repaired relationships again, which was required. That I never got the impression that Euros was in cahoots with Culverton. I just think she was curious about her younger brother. As she knew about Mycroft's involvement in her imprisonment, but she didn't know anything about Sherlock, like who he's become, firsthand. I'm sure she could infer a lot based on everything that we know about her, but it's not the same as experiencing a person for real, and she did that. For whatever reason, I don't think they properly addressed that in the next episode, which is another hole that I just don't appreciate.
And I guess that's kind of my issue a bit with that is they don't explain why she chose Faith Smith. And, you know, it's not like she knew that Sherlock was going to go. Maybe, I mean, yeah, maybe she figured it out. I don't know. But it just, upon this last rewatch, it was like, huh, am I missing something? Did I blank out for a second when they kind of explained why she chose Culverton Smith? Because I get her wanting to check out Sherlock for herself. You know, you're a lot kinder, you know, than anyone, she says. So I get that. But it was just why this person, why that character, and how that
Yeah.
character is connected to the overall case and story.
It's just one of those things, you know, they could have done better and they didn't.
I really don't like the six Thatchers.
I don't either. There's not much to like about it, but like I said, there's something comical about just running around and smashing all of these Margaret Thatcher busts. Like, who has these in the first place and why? I never got the appeal of having the bust of some political figure or historical figure in your house just staring at you.
Yeah, that I don't understand, but yeah, I mean, I liked kind of the case that s starts it all, you know, with the kid doing the happy birthday and what a
Yeah.
terrible way to die. What a way to lose a kid. Holy shit, that is tragic as
Yeah.
fuck. And then of course Sherlock trying to hide his giddiness and whatnot. Classic fun.
Yeah, I
But
love how Watson's always reminding him, like, nope, too far.
I know, I love that. He's like, you know, that what we talked about, you know, we talked about this before. And Sherlock's like, oh, yeah. I don't care for the fact that we had to revisit Mary's assassin past. I thought that was, it felt kind of lazy. And I'm like, I don't think, you know, when John burned the drive and he's like, you know, your past is your past and your future is my privilege, like that I felt like could have been the end of it. But
I
we get
know, I
this
wanted
whole
it to be the end of it. It would have been nice.
Absolutely.
But
But
no, they
instead,
drag it all up again.
yes. And it's like, and then who the killer was, you know, who the voice behind the phone was the secretary. And that's, you know, alluded to almost like right away with Mary,
It
like secretaries
was.
know everything. And I didn't care for any of that. I also don't care for this idea that John thought about cheating, that he it didn't go past texting, but he wanted more, and he still wants more by the end of The Lying Detective.
Yeah,
I hate.
that whole plot line
Oh.
was infuriating. Like, as mad as you were about Molly, this was me mad. It's
Yes.
like, do not ruin John Watson.
Absolutely. And while I have issues with the actor himself over things that he has said semi-recently, I hated this for this character. I was like, this is not the John Watson we have been given. You know, especially the John Watson with Mary, right? Like maybe Bachelor John Watson, sure. You know, he's just trying to get off with Sarah, he says all loud and public and right in front of Sarah during Blind Banker. But
Yeah.
this made zero sense other than showing that men are weak.
It's not that I expect Watson to be a perfect person. I think it's
Right.
made quite clear throughout the series that he is a very flawed individual. They did
Yes.
not need to add this to him.
I agree. So it's kind of like, did they do this just so they could kill Mary? And again, you know, a woman's death suffering to advance a male character. And I get, you know, the main characters of the show are male. I get that, you know, da 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 da
Yeah.
da. But it just seemed unnecessary. I think, like, Mary still could have died without us having to go back and revisit her whole assassin past. It could have been some other tragic incident of Sherlock's cockiness, putting people in danger. I mean, himself and then other people feeling the need to save him. But I just, yeah, I didn't care for it. But I thought her death scene was really good and really emotional. And like, I cried a little the first time I watched it. And it's all of the writing, the whole her goodbye to John, The, you know, being Mary Watson was the greatest privilege he could have given her and all of this. And then she just dies and it's like, oh my God. And Sherlock's standing there and he doesn't know how to process any of this. I love her little apology to him and how they're just kind of like, you know, she's like, I'm sorry for shooting you that one time. And he's like, it's all right, all is forgiven. And because that still felt very true to those characters. And the actress did a really good job dying. It was
She
very,
did.
very emotional. And I thought it was done very well. But at the same time, I'm just like, no.
Is it stupid though that I was really mad at John Watson in this moment? Not just because of the implied cheating and everything, but also because not once did he say, I love her. Like, and I was like, your wife is dying in front of your eyes, and you don't even have a thought to say, I love you to them.
Good point. Because I was annoyed with John for the almost cheating thing and then immediately blaming Sherlock for Mary's death.
Well, I get the blame part because Mary tried to warn Sherlock from not pushing Vivian too far, and he did.
Absolutely.
But still,
Absolutely.
it was Mary's choice to take
Exactly.
that bullet.
And I don't like that John took as long as he did to kind of come around to that. And I understand there's, you know, the grief and the trauma and all of that kind of all mixed in, and you're not going to think clearly. And I get all of that, but I don't like it.
I don't either. I mean, it's a very human reaction, but the fact that he didn't say, I love you to Mary, I'm like, really?
I never really
I don't
picked up
know.
on that, but maybe that was just kind of part of him like denying what was happening, you know, just that sh it's gonna be okay, it's gonna be okay. But still, once she turned to Sherlock to say goodbye, John, you know, and then she goes back to address John. John should have squeezed in and I love you even after she died, you know,
Yeah.
anything.
I
So,
mean, the grief like screams that he did were pretty convincing, but it's like, come on.
I have to go back real quick because there was, maybe it was this one. But at one point, yes, I think it is. I think it is the Six Thatchers. But at one point, Sherlock is in Mycroft's office showing off pictures of John and Mary's baby.
Yeah, that was funny.
Like,
Totally random.
what? Totally random. I just love that. Okay. Yeah. And then the final problem is just that. It's the final problem.
Yeah.
So I'm very, I don't like the Six Thatchers is my least favorite out of this season. This is second, Lying Detective being the first, because while I like some of the inclusion of like the sister and these, you know, little rooms that she has set up, these tests, these puzzles, the ruthlessness of her, again, showing how emotional Sherlock is for not seeing that there is no glass in her cell to actually keep her in,
Yeah, that
all
was
of these
funny.
things. But I don't like. So you got the girl on the plane, which is actually Eros, because she's so clever that she's created this world. So she starts off at Sharonford, and she gets out and everything. And so she's there in one of the offices, playing these games, talking to Sherlock Mycroft and John as they're working their way through, and then she ends up tranking them because Sherlock isn't playing along appropriately. And now they're back at Musgrave. Sherlock is in like a shipping container made to look like the room he was just in. John's in a well. Mycroft is somewhere. We find out later he's just locked in her cell, which is weird because it didn't have glass. So how is he locked in her? Anyway,
Yeah, I know
you know, I
that was
guess
like,
there's.
what? Did they put it back already? I don't
Yeah.
understand.
I mean, I get that it's like super secure and there's like locked doors to get into that area anyway, but come on now. It's like what? You just all she wanted was what? Sherlock's attention. She wanted to play with Sherlock and now he's playing with her. This was all out of like jealousy for Redbeard, his childhood friend. What? And then she's like upstairs in the old rundown Musgrave house on the phone as the little girl on the plane.
Right. But
So what the
also,
fuck?
I'm sorry. They said that she got put away not because of Redbeard's disappearance, but what came after when she burnt down the house. I'm like, excuse me? She killed a child.
Right. It's not a dog. Like, and the fact that Mycroft at that point was still playing that it was, you would think at that point Mycroft would maybe come clean about the whole Redbeard thing. Or did he
No,
feel
that's
like
not
Sherlock had
Mycroft.
to, right? Like Sherlock had to experience all of that for himself to really have it hit home. Otherwise, he was never going to believe it unless he experienced it himself.
Maybe that's the case, but seriously. It was only when she endangered the rest of us by burning down the house that we felt it prudent to lock her away. Not when she already killed an innocent child.
Yes.
Like, there's so much about this episode that is just so upsetting to me.
I completely agree. 'Cause then at the end, everything is fine, right? Sherlock saves the day. He solves the puzzle. He remembers his sister. And then, because Mycroft lied to their parents about what actually happened to her. So we actually get to see that part with the mom being all mad. And the like one of the few times Sherlock actually stands up for Mycroft and he's like, he did his best kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's not a lot, it's not a big moment. But it's
No.
there. and then they eventually Sherlock goes down and he plays violin with his sister to the point where they're able to put on a little mini concert for the family. All is forgiven. Mom holds Mycroft's hand as they sit and enjoy this moment. What?
That was, yeah. No, I didn't like the happy family concert bit of it, but I did like that they were able to speak to each other through the violin playing.
And
Like that part appealed to me, but the happy family concert part of it, that pissed me off.
See, and I never looked at it as them communicating through violin, and that makes perfect sense. I guess at that point I was just kind of in the state of like, what the fuckery is happening?
Yeah.
But no, that makes sense that that is kind of their language to each other. If she taught him how to play and all of that, then and this is how they can still have some sort of sibling relationship, sure, fine, whatever. But everything else, I have a bit of issues with.
Yeah.
But I will say my Moriarty still knows how to make an entrance. So we get a little flashback because he was Mycroft's gift to his sister, which again, dumbest fucking decision Mycroft has ever made.
I don't agree with the constant inferences that Mycroft is cleverer than Sherlock. I think he's the dumbest one of them all.
I was gonna ask, so do you want to rank the cleverness of the Holmes kids? I mean, you just kind of
I
did.
just kind
Yeah.
of did. But I
To make them
will
sisters.
say this. Even in reading the books, I never appreciated Mycroft as a character. I appreciated his superior intellect in the books because it made Sherlock seem more fallible and human than he otherwise seemed. But I don't like him. But then the show happened, and I went into the show like, I hate you, Mycroft. Like, as soon as he introduced himself, I hate you, I hate you. And then by the end of it, I'm like, okay, you're a dumbass, but I don't actually hate you. So I guess that's one of the burning questions that I have for you. Is there a character that really grew on you?
I really think it would be Mycroft because initially starting the show, like, didn't really think much of him other than just kind of like the older brother, cold, emotionless, just like a Holmes kid kind of thing. But with every rewatch, multiple rewatches in my winter seasons, I've caught all these emotional moments from Mycroft and in turn, like these moments from Sherlock as well. So it's kind of become like a case study in their bullshit and how much they do actually care about each other.
Yeah.
So it's been kind of so when I watch it and I keep that in mind about Mycroft, he becomes a more sympathetic character as someone who is an older sibling, just doing your best to keep your younger siblings kind of safe
Yeah.
in line, no matter how misguided their actions are. Because I do think these Holmes kids all care about each other, but for whatever reason, they are just not able to show it in non-violent, fucked up manner. They're
Right.
just not
Well,
emotionally equipped to be emotional.
it was a demonstration of their conversation where Mycroft was like, "I'll be mother," and Sherlock was like, "And there is our whole childhood in a nutshell."
Right? Yeah. So I would have to say, yeah, Mycroft, because I mean, I've always liked really all the characters.
Yeah.
Even Lestrade, that poor bastard. I love that Sherlock finally learns his name at the end. I did find it odd that Sherlock knew Anderson's name before he knew
It's
Lestrade's
easier
name.
to remember the names of the people who annoy you.
Fair enough. I
But
did.
also, it was him kind of poking fun at Lestrade. And I think that it was also kind of them poking fun at themselves for doing this, because in the stories, there's actually, it's not just Lestrade, there's Gregson and Lestrade. And they actually mention Gregson by name
Oh,
in
they
Abominable
did.
Bride. So, but in the show, they combine Gregson with Lestrade by calling him Greg Lestrade. So I just felt like they were just riffing off of that the whole time.
Oh, absolutely. 'Cause then I also read on the IMDb trivia. I saw that part, and then the fact that in the books, Lestrade doesn't have a name. And or his name's never given or it's alluded to or something, and that's why in the series Sherlock can never remember it and it's always just some other G name.
That's probably true as well.
So again, all these nods, these Easter eggs, these homages all kind of sprinkled throughout the series, which as you know you the lover of the stories can appreciate, and me not knowing the stories can still appreciate
Right.
because then I obsessively read all the trivia and everything about it. So, oh, let's see. Well, we got through it. We got through the whole series.
We did.
Holy shit. All right. So, any other. So, we'll do our stray bubbles. Anything that you didn't get a chance to mention real quick that you just need to get off your chest?
Nothing immediately comes to mind. How about you?
So, I wasn't going to mention anything, but because I was like, oh my God, we're still recording. But who do you think was sending out Mary's DVDs? Do you think it was maybe Mycroft or someone else, or she just really well timed?
Can you schedule packages?
I mean, I suppose, but how do you schedule for your death?
I don't
I
know.
mean, okay, like that's poorly worded, but you know what I mean. How do you schedule your murder?
Yeah, I really don't know. Like, it feels like something an estate lawyer would do.
Yes. So
And I suppose it's not important, but it is a good question.
it's not important. Again, all these like weird little things that have kind of popped up in these multiple rewatches. Let's see. I think that's about it. I mean, I always love how they talk about how dramatic Sherlock is, and he just can't help himself. He's got a touch of the dramatic.
That's true of all the Holmeses, I think.
Oh, absolutely. Good Lord, Euros.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm done. I promise. I swear to God. I'm scrolling away from all my notes and I'm getting up to the closing. So we will move on to the Midwest goodbye. I promise we won't take forever getting to the very end. But as part of the Midwest goodbye, Laura. Oh, wait, the 6 degrees of Nicolas Cage. Sorry. So,
Yes.
Laura, how did you do?
Oh, I was lazy. I was channeling my inner Mycroft. So Oh man, I've lost my train of thought now. It's like a
Oh
two-step one. I'm like, what is it again? Okay. So Benedict Cumberbatch played Sherlock, was in the movie The Current War with Nicholas Hoult, who was in Renfield with Nicolas Cage.
Oh, very good. Nice. So I went with Andrew Scott because he's hot.
Hi.
Sorry, it's so good. But he was in Band of Brothers with literally everyone else, including Ron Livingston, who was in Adaptation with Nicolas Cage.
Okay.
So I guess not literally everyone else, because Nick wasn't in Band of Brothers.
That's a failing on his part.
All right. So what's been streaming in your bubble? And if you haven't been watching anything, any games you're playing or book or podcast or what you've been up to, what you've been listening to?
Streaming in my bubble, other than Sherlock, because that was a massive rewatch.
It sure is.
I've been watching an anime, and now the name of that is escaping me. I'm doing so well with names right now.
You're
Demon
doing
Slayer,
great.
I think it's called.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It is very interesting. I guess kids are really into it, and I was like, really? And then it turns out it's one of the most rewatchable shows for one of my friends. So I was like, all right, I'll give it a shot. And I'm kind of entertained by it.
Okay. I know we've seen that pop up and my oldest and I, we watched the Attack on Titans series, and so kind of been wondering like what else is out there that's similar to that he and I can both watch. And that came up one day and I was like, "Oh, what about this?" And he's like, "Eh, just fine, whatever." But I have been curious about it. So if
I
you
mean,
say
it's
it's,
kind of odd, but
I like odd.
yeah, it's enjoyable. Other than that, we've been on a classic 90s cartoon binge with the X-Men with Felix. It's
Nice.
funny because, like, he gets as bored with the show as I do, but boy, when that theme song comes on, we are all about it. It's one of the best theme songs ever.
Yeah. Did you see the trailer for the upcoming X-Men 97? So same animation
No.
style, kind of picks up where the original series left off.
Oh, so you're telling me I really do have to pay attention whenever you watch this now?
Yes. So I can't remember when that's coming out, but yeah, the trailer for that came out the other day and I watched it and I was like,
Well,
oh.
I love it because, like, I really hate, Jubilee, as like I find her so annoying. And Felix must have picked up on that from me somehow without me saying anything. He just cannot remember her name. So I'm like, we'll just call her Jambalaya. And it stopped.
That's hilarious. I should do a rewatch of that too. I mean, I haven't watched it since I was literally a child, so
Same. And I'm
yeah.
like, I really thought that, what are we, like 30 years on from the 90s right now?
It's none of anyone's business.
And I'm like, I really thought 30 years would be enough time for me to pay attention to this properly. I'm like, poop. But almost like every other episode, Felix said, who's your favorite X-Men? I don't know. Like, Beast is cool because he's smart and, beastie. Mystique's kind of cool because she could shapeshift. Professor Xavier's cool because he's smart and he can control things with his mind and, like talk to people with his mind and his legs don't work like mine. So like always cool to see that kind of representation. But I'm like,
Yeah.
oh, but if I'm being honest with you, Felix, it's Magneto. He's like, why
Of
do you
course.
always like the Felix? Like, I don't know. They're
Because
just
they're
more
so much more
interesting.
interesting. Jinx.
It's like, He's really making me take a hard look at myself. Like, this was disabled representation in the 90s. And I'm like, Magneto's so cool.
Well, that's awesome. I think that's something we actually should pull up and start rewatching because, like I said, it's been a little while. But
Yeah. What's been in your bubble besides Sherlock?
besides Sherlock, let's see. Well, hubby and I are watching The Witcher season 3. We're almost done with that because he hopped along on my rewatch of the first two seasons.
I commend you for
And
your effort because I couldn't do it.
for what? Season
Season
three?
3 of The Witcher. I got
It's.
super bored.
I can at 100% understand that. I still really, really enjoy the first season. Season two is a little better on the second watch, but season three, it's like, since I only kind of know the video game, I'm like, I don't think any of this is correct. No wonder Superman got mad and left.
Well, have you read
I
the
don't know if that's
books? Because
actually
I
how.
haven't read the books about it either. I just have the video games as reference, and I'm wondering, are the video games accurate to the books?
Out of the, between the show and the video game, I believe the video game is going to be more close to the books than the show has been. Especially, I think, in this last season, because this is the season that kind of had the rumors that Henry Cavill was getting all mad because the showrunners were departing too far from the source material. And it's like, it's one thing to have to adapt and make the changes needed to properly translate from page to screen. But if it's getting to the point where beefcake nerd Henry Cavill is like, this is wrong, I don't, maybe listen. I don't know. Take that into consideration. But.
Yeah, and now he's doing like a Warhammer 40K thing, and that's gonna be like nerd nirvana. So
Yeah.
it's gonna be interesting.
Otherwise, not a lot else. Because, like you said, Sherlock is quite the under. It's what, like, 15 episodes, but it's like a billion hours because they're all an hour and a half.
I don't want to think about the time commitment that that was.
But yeah, other than that, not watching a lot, not much else. I am currently obsessed with the Villain series, book series by Serena Valentino. So
Oh,
it's
yeah,
like
I saw that.
Oh my God, I think you'd really like these. So it's like the Disney villain kind of like origin stories. With some interesting twists and turns that with the two that I finished, I'm really liking. So I read through audiobooks, Never Never, the story of Captain Hook. And you know what? Fuck Peter Pan. Fuck Tinkerbell.
I kind of had that feeling about Peter Pan.
Yeah.
From the beginning, and I couldn't ever articulate why. But Tinkerbell's interesting. I just thought she was a bit dramatic because apparently, if you don't pay enough attention to her, she'll die.
I mean, she's within good reason kind of a little bitch in this, but she's also still kind of a little bitch in the animated movie. Yeah. But it was really, I really, really enjoyed that. So it's like Captain Hook before he's Captain Hook. And I think his name is actually James, if I'm remembering
Yes, that's
correctly.
correct.
So he goes and he decides he's gonna, he wants to, because he ended up in Neverland when he was a child, but he was claimed within a week. So, but ever since then, he's been trying to get back to Neverland and never ever does. Becomes an adult, decides, he wants to do the pirate thing and joins Blackbeard's crew and everything. And they have this really kind of interesting friendship dynamic that if you've watched Our Flag Means Death, all I could picture was Stede Bonnet, the gentleman pirate, and Taika Waititi's version of Blackbeard as these two characters in this book. So as I'm listening to it, that's who I'm picturing. Because
Okay.
it worked. All right. It worked.
All right.
So yeah, so now in my head, James and Blackbeard were once in love. So, and then I just finished The Mistress of All Evil. So that's Maleficent's story. There was an interesting twist there. The storytelling is a little kind of back and forth. I was getting a little lost for a tiny bit of it. But That's just, I think, kind of my own ADHD. But I really liked that one and how that all kind of came together. So I've got the graphic novels because there's a long, long wait for the audiobooks. So I've got the graphic novels for Cruella's story called Evil Thing and Fairest of All, Snow White's story. So it very much kind of reminds me of like Once Upon a Time, but like for the villains. And
Okay.
kind of like the just taking, just kind of twisting things a little bit, making little changes. But I love these, and as I'm listening to the audiobooks, I'm kind of picturing them as like an animated limited series to tell each story. And the way I picture it is anytime there's like mention or reference to the character that we know from the original Disney movie, that those parts be shown in the original animation style and then change animation style when we get to the origin bits. I think it could be a lot of fun, really interesting. It could be different animation styles for each story.
Yeah, I'd
So,
watch that.
yeah. So that's my pitch. That's my brilliant idea.
I like it.
But I'm so fucking obsessed with these right now. I love them. I highly recommend them. Even if you're not like big into fairy tales, if you know these characters, I think you'll have fun with the changes, these little twists that they make. And, because I don't always need to sympathize with my villains to love them. In fact, sometimes I don't like that.
Yeah.
But here, maybe because it's Disney, I'm a little softer about it. And I'm like, oh,
That makes sense, though.
poor Maleficent, whatever her fucking name is. Poor Captain Hook. So, truly enjoying them.
Awesome. Well, I'll have to check them out.
They're available at your local library. But I think this is going to do it for us. I think we have said enough.
I'm
So
inclined to agree.
I think maybe for once we covered it all. Probably not. I'll be editing and be like, "Oh my God, we didn't talk about this." But until that happens, Laura, I just want to thank you so much for joining me today in this long overdue and so much fun episode talking about Sherlock and finally getting it all out there. I was going to explode over the winter time because I'd filled with so many loud opinions. And I was able to get them out finally. So, thank you.
You're welcome.
And of course, thank you to all the listeners for listening today. And let me know what you thought of today's episode. Or if you have suggestions for future episodes, you can go ahead and send those to mystreamingbubble@gmail.com. Also, make sure you're following both my podcasts. That's right, multiple, two. That's really all I have. So there's this one, obviously, My Streaming Bubble. You can follow me on Twitter at Streaming Bubble, no my in that. Facebook, Instagram, and Threads as My Streaming Bubble. And of course, you can listen on a podcast player near you. My second podcast is Twin It to Win It podcast that I co-host with my podcast brain twin, Aaron, from It's a Fandom Thing, where we test our twinningness by trying to guess, does she like this movie or does she hate this movie? And then we reveal our answers, we talk about the movie, and it's a lot of fun. And that one's a monthly podcast, so. But you can follow us on Twitter. We're at Twin It to Win Pod, no second it in that. Facebook, Instagram, and Threads as Twin It to Win It Podcast. And you can listen to us on most podcast players. So until next time, my lovely bubblies, again, thank you all for listening and keep streaming. Bye.
Bye.